friends, we can all listen to The Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We're Super Bowl champs, but time does stop when you look in your daughter's eyes and you get to celebrate this moment. I got to look in my wife's eyes. I get to celebrate this with her. I mean, they've been there. My wife's been there through everything. My family's been there through everything. And to be in this moment, to celebrate this moment, that's what it's about. And I'm just grateful.
A grateful Philadelphia Eagles quarterback, Nick Foles, the most valuable player of the National Football League's 52nd Super Bowl championship game in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Nick Foles threw for 373 yards and three touchdown passes to lead the Eagles to a thrilling 41-33 upset of the defending champion New England Patriots. Nick Foles also became the first quarterback in Super Bowl history to catch a touchdown pass. Nick hauled in a one-yard toss from tight end Troy Burton on a trick play just before halftime. It was Philadelphia's first Super Bowl title, and Foles says that makes it even more special.
To be a part of the Philadelphia Eagles' first championship, we've all waited a long time to be in this position to be world champions. The people who bleed green, the people of Philadelphia, the people all across the nation that support the Eagles. You know, being a part of this, being drafted to Philadelphia, and being fortunate enough to come back and be a part of this team, to be a piece of this puzzle, it's been a long time coming, and, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of celebrating tonight.
Another Eagle who's celebrating is running back Jay Ajayi, one of two Philadelphia players with ties to Nigeria. Jay Ajayi's parents are Nigerian, and they moved here to the USA when Jay was a young boy. And Eagles receiver Nelson Agholor, who caught 9 passes for 84 yards in Super Bowl 52, was born in Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital. Meanwhile, running back Jay Ajayi gained 57 yards on 9 carries. Jay, talk to us about winning the Super Bowl.
It was surreal. I'm still kind of in shock right now of everything. The confetti, seeing the emotions on all my teammates' face, and then really realizing what we've done and accomplished. Special. This is so special to be the first ever to bring a Super Bowl to Philadelphia and to be a part of it. It's a dream come true for me, man.
Now we'll hear from the two Super Bowl coaches, Doug Peterson of the Eagles and Bill Belichick of the Patriots. First, Coach Peterson.
You know, obviously it's rewarding to win the Super Bowl and lead these guys. But listen, my hat's off to the staff, to the ownership, to the players, the fans. Our fans have been waiting a long time for this. And Mr. Lurie's been waiting a long time for this. And I'm so excited to be a part of it and obviously bring the Lombardi Trophy back to Philadelphia. And just can't wait to get back there and celebrate with our fans.
Just couldn't quite make enough plays to come out on top tonight. It's disappointing, but proud of the way our team competed. Those guys are champions of the AFC. They earned that, and you know, we just came up a little bit short tonight. So it's a tough way to end a lot of really good things that happened this season. That's what this game's about.
That's what this game's about. That's New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who along with star quarterback Tom Brady came up short in their quest for a record-tying 6th Super Bowl title. Brady played very well in Super Bowl 52. He passed for a Super Bowl record 505 yards and 3 touchdowns. Overall, the Eagles and the Patriots combined for 1,151 yards of total offense, breaking the Super Bowl record in that category by the end of the third quarter. I think Super Bowl 52 will be remembered as one of the most exciting in the National Football League's history. And I'll talk more about the big game later in the show with Dan Friedel. Now let's go to New York City, where an American relay team set a world indoor record at the 111th Milrose Games. Reporter Jonah Haskell tells us more from New York.
This weekend, as the United States turned its attention to the Super Bowl in frigid Minneapolis, hundreds of high school, college, and professional athletes gathered at the Fort Washington Armory in New York City for the 111th edition of the historic Milrose Games. This year, as in many years past, the games included a number of firsts. Both Wanamaker Mile champions were first-time winners, and the USA team blew past a world indoor record in the Rudin women's 4x800-meter relay. That team, made up of Krishana Williams, Raven Rogers, Charlene Lipsey, and Ajay Wilson, all under the age of 27, smoked the rest of the Milrose field, beating the second-place NY All-Stars team by nearly 6 full seconds for a time of 8 minutes, 5.89 seconds. That eclipsed the previous indoor world record of 8.06.24, set by a team of Russian women in 2011. Another Russian sprinter's record was in some jeopardy as well, this time in the women's 300 meters. Shanae Miller-Weibo of the Bahamas covered that distance in 35.45 seconds to claim victory by almost 2 full seconds and exactly equal the world record set by Irina Privalova way back in 1993. Technically, though, Privalova's record wasn't actually in danger because the 300 meters at the Milrose Games isn't recognized for official world record status by the IAAF. As a result, Miller-Weibo's time is simply a world best. The main events, as always at the Milrose Games, were the men's and women's Wanamaker Miles. The women's race featured a photo finish as 25-year-old Colleen Quigley, who'd pulled away from the pack as they neared the finish line, was almost overtaken by her Nike teammate Kate Grace in the final meters. But Quigley held on to win by 0.03 of a second to capture her first Wanamaker Mile title. Quigley said she didn't expect to win at all.
I haven't had that, you know, the build-up that I wanted to. I didn't have the fall that I wanted to, but I told myself that as long as I finish feeling like I gave everything I had, and I just gave it all, and it was like collapsed, then I would be like happy.
Quigley said she would have been happy finishing 10th, but she was surprised by her power in her first race of the year.
I was coming up on, you know, the last like 2:50 or so, and I was like, well, like, here's to test myself, you know, no regrets. And I just went for it, and I couldn't feel anyone behind me. Apparently, there was someone right behind me. But I felt like I was just, like, out there powering by myself, which is scary and fun at the same time.
Quigley's time was 4 minutes, 30.05 seconds, less than a half second over her personal best. The story of the men's mile, going in at least, was whether New Zealand's Nick Willis, running in his 6th Wanamaker mile, would finally be able to win his first title. But once the race began, all eyes were on the UK's Chris O'Hare, who jumped out to a large lead about halfway through. O'Hare slowed at the end, but the lead was enough and he won comfortably, posting a time of 3 minutes, 54.14 seconds. The 27-year-old was grateful for the support of his family.
I didn't feel that great at the start, but, you know, lots of people have come from far to watch and cheer me on, so it's huge to be able to do it for everybody who came so far. It's just special.
Nick Willis managed only a 5th-place finish, his worst ever in the Wanamaker Mile, and he was disappointed after he felt like he got a good start.
It was one of the best ever starts for me in the terms of, like, slotting into my position. No one fought me or kept me out wide. And so after 200, 400, even 600 is like, this is a perfect spot, but the mile's a strength race, and I just didn't have the strength to.
No word yet on whether Willis, who's 32 years old, will be back for a 7th attempt next year. In other events, Greece's Katerina Stefanidi, the reigning gold medalist from the Rio Olympics, won the women's pole vault, leaping up to 4.71 meters in the air, and Kenyan Emmanuel Korir won the men's 800 meters, finishing in 1 minute 44 seconds, the third fastest indoor time ever. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York. Now back to Sonny Young in Washington.
Thanks, Jonah. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In African football, Let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the Atlas Lions of Morocco, who lifted the African Nations Championship Trophy Sunday with a convincing 4-0 victory over the Super Eagles of Nigeria in Casablanca. Ayoub El Kabi scored Morocco's last goal in the 73rd minute, and let's give him a sunny side of sports salute too. El Kabi scored 9 goals overall in the competition and was named the best player of the tournament. Reports from Casablanca say his performance might earn him a call-up to Morocco's World Cup-bound team. Our Voice of America listeners will remember this 3-week tournament in Morocco was for locally based players in Africa. Joining us now with more details of the final is reporter Samson Omalley. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Morocco became the first host nation to claim the CHAN title with a convincing 4-0 win after they overpowered the Super Eagles of Nigeria, who played most of the second half with just 10 men in Sunday's final. The Atlas Lions become the fourth different winner of the CHAN title, joining DR Congo, Tunisia and Libya on the honors board. Kunle Solaja is one of Nigeria's sports editor.
I envisage that Nigeria will find it very difficult to beat Morocco, but I never thought it would be a merciless beating that Nigeria will receive. Let's consider some facts. One, this is a defensive side facing an ultra-attacking side. And if you watch the first half very well, you discover that the Nigerian team was only trying to absorb pressure.
Some other Nigerian fans are not surprised the Super Eagles of Nigeria were beaten to the title by the Atlas Lions of Morocco.
Nigerian team should even have no business getting to the final, owing to the way they played from the beginning. You know, I think they were very, very lucky getting a 92nd-minute goal against Angola in the quarterfinal. That is when I think they were just good enough for the quarterfinal. They shouldn't have gotten beyond that stage.
It sounded like Nigeria just got there by luck. They were just lucky to have, you know, scaling through till the final.
The 2018 CHAN tournament, which ended in Morocco on Sunday, should have taken place in Kenya, but the East African country could not get most of its venues ready, leading to CAF stripping Kenya of the hosting right. Nick Mwadwewa, president of the Kenya Football Federation, has been speaking on why Kenya lost the hosting right to the tournament.
I'd say that I'm not happy the way they communicated it, and that's what I've told them, but I know the reasons why we lost it, and these are colleagues. We have to get more serious. Morocco picked this up when? In October, and no hitch delivered tournament.
I am Samson Omalley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Joining us now for a Super Bowl chat is sports reporter Dan Friedel. Dan, first off, thanks for hosting the show last week. How did you like helming the sunny side of sports ship?
It was my pleasure to be in the big chair for a few days. Thanks for having me in there, Sonny.
I kind of sense that you were getting a bit more comfortable in the big chair, Dan.
Yeah, well, you know, it's big shoes to fill, but as the days went on, I think I caught my stride. And, you know, we're just talking about the runners up in New York City, and I felt like I got the pacing just right at the end.
Well, Dan, I told our VOA listeners earlier in the show that I think Super Bowl 52, in which the Philadelphia Eagles won their first Super Bowl trophy, will be remembered as one of the most exciting in the National Football League's history. How would you rate the game's overall quality?
Well, the one thing that I thought was missing was much defense. The game set a record for any playoff game in the history of the NFL with over 1,100 yards of offense. I really was expecting to see a little more stout performance by the defensive backfields and the defensive lines of both the Eagles and the Patriots. I mean, as the losing quarterback, Tom Brady basically has all of the individual records now in the history of the Super Bowl, throwing for 500 yards, for the Patriots. And I think, like most sports fans, after the Eagles scored their touchdown to go ahead in the game late in the fourth quarter, go ahead 32-26, there was enough time left for the Patriots to try to march down the field and score a game-winning touchdown. I really thought that Tom Brady and the Patriots, like Sean Leahy talked about last week, the sports editor of the Boston Herald, when he called in to talk with us, you know, no hurdle seems too high for Brady and the Patriots, and it turned out that that's exactly what it was. The hurdle was too high, thanks to a big play by the Eagles defense on Sunday night.
In terms of big plays, Dan, one of the big plays in Super Bowl 52, just before halftime, a trick play in which Nick Foles, the most valuable player of the game, caught a pass from tight end Troy Burton. Foles is the first quarterback in Super Bowl history to catch a touchdown pass. How important was that play, Dan, in terms of Philadelphia's psyche going into the second half?
Yeah, that was a gutsy play to call for Coach Doug Peterson. I mean, here's Doug Peterson, who was coaching high school football at one point after his pro career ended. He was mostly a backup quarterback in his career to luminaries like Brett Favre, and worked his way up the coaching ranks to be given the job with the Eagles a couple of years ago. And before the Super Bowl and after the Super Bowl, he was saying that the Patriots are so good that you just can't give them a break. And if they had decided to kick a field goal there, go into halftime with less than a touchdown lead, I think it would have been a different story in the second half, especially since the Patriots went out and scored a touchdown early in the third quarter. So getting that 10-point lead and the kind of the deflating trick play that wound up with Nick Foles catching a wide open pass in the end zone, that was big. And late in the game, the Eagles defense making a stand when the Patriots got the ball back, that was huge too, getting the fumble. Now, even though they didn't go on and score a touchdown, it did cushion gave them a cushion a little bit, and made the Patriots need to score a touchdown and get an elusive two-point conversion if they were going to have a chance to win the game. So those two plays were really the key. And, of course, Foles was the MVP based on his steady performance as the quarterback. I mean, any other year, people would be talking about Nick Foles as having one of the greatest Super Bowls in NFL history. And you look across the sideline, and Tom Brady winds up with 500 yards and three touchdown passes. But really, it was an outstanding game for the Eagles offense. And I also have to mention the two players on the Eagles with African heritage. Jay Ajayi from the Eagles had 57 yards at the running back, and Nelson Aguilar from Nigeria accounted for about 100 yards of offense with 9 catches in the game, as the Eagles wide receivers were pretty much open whenever they needed to be in the game last night. It was really a great game overall. It was in contention the whole time, and I'm going to put it up there as one of the top Super Bowls of all time.
Ajayi and Aguilar definitely turned in some solid performances, Dan. What about the status now of Nick Foles earning accolades after his MVP performance? And yet, he was a backup quarterback to Carson Wentz, who might have ended up being the most valuable player of the regular season had he not been hurt. Where does Foles go from here, Dan?
You know, this is one of the conversations that we had last week with Martin Frank from the News Journal in Delaware, who joined us, talking about how resilient the Eagles have been this season. I mean, most teams would have cracked with their all-everything quarterback, the future of the franchise, getting hurt so late in the season. I mean, we've seen it so many times before in the NFL where a star player goes out right before the playoffs and the team just can't recover. I mean, they did have a little bit of a rough game in their first playoff game against the Atlanta Falcons in Philadelphia, but then Foles really caught fire and had a great game in the NFC Championship game against the Minnesota Vikings and carried that momentum forward into the Super Bowl. I think that Carson Wentz is the quarterback of the future for the Eagles for, you know, 10 or 15 more seasons. He's a really sturdy guy. I mean, maybe he won't be able to run as fast or jump as high, but he's a quarterback after all. He doesn't have to dunk a basketball every game. Foles, you know, Foles has had a few nice seasons in his career. He actually was a great high school player in Texas growing up. But he's the kind of guy who has established himself as somebody that a team like my hometown Cleveland Browns might take a chance on as a steady veteran quarterback to come in for a franchise that's really struggling, or a team like the Denver Broncos. So I wouldn't be surprised that as soon as it looks like Carson Wentz is back to 100%, that you see Foles getting traded to a team that's desperate for a quarterback.
If we look across the sideline, Dan, as you so eloquently put it, Tom Brady, he'll be 41 years old next season, and it sounds like he wants to come back again for the Patriots after this 500-yard-plus passing performance. What about Brady's future?
Well, everything that we've heard this fall and winter leading up to the Super Bowl says Brady wants to play until he's 45. Now, there were some moments during the game last night where I thought, gosh, can this guy really make it through even this game? Some of the passes he threw didn't quite look to have the zip that they had 10 years ago. But, you know, when you look at the stats at the end of the game, you think this guy is legitimately the best quarterback in the NFL. And the way the rules are in the NFL, where you can't hit the quarterback as often as you could have in the 70s and 80s, it's possible Brady could play for a few more years. The question is he going to have the weapons? One of the big stories coming out of the Super Bowl is that the huge, athletic, strong, tight end, great receiver, Rob Gronkowski, who's really dealt with a lot of injuries. I mean, as intimidating a presence as he is, he gets hit hard. He goes down hard. He had a concussion in the AFC Championship game against Jacksonville. There's some question whether he's going to be up for coming back next year and playing as long as some of the tight ends in NFL history have played in the past. You know, guys like Kellen Winslow and Ozzie Newsome and Jason Witten and Mike Ditka, you know, these guys are known as the big, strong tight ends of NFL past. And if Brady doesn't have Gronkowski, we'll see if he decides he wants to play until he's 45.
Another storyline coming out of the Super Bowl, Dan, Malcolm Butler, one of the top defenders for the Patriots, did not play in Super Bowl 52. Was it because of disciplinary reasons?
I don't think we've gotten the whole story on that yet. Lots of people are wondering, and Butler is definitely complaining, making some waves about the fact that he didn't play any of the snaps. He played, I think, one play on special teams. Butler, if you remember, just 3 years ago, made the game-saving play as the Patriots won the Super Bowl against the Seattle Seahawks. So I think that there's a lot to see in the offseason whether Butler remains with the Patriots. We've seen it in the past that the Patriots coach Bill Belichick doesn't suffer controversy much from his players. And if a player wants to go and he has something bad to say about how he's been treated, he's gone as soon as possible. So it'll be interesting to see what comes from that story as the week progresses.
Dan, let's give the Philadelphia Eagles a Sunny Side of Sports salute for winning their first Super Bowl title. And why don't we also give a salute to Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount, winning their second consecutive Super Bowl trophy. Last year, they won it with the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great accomplishment, too. Very few teams have gone back-to-back, and very few players have gone back-to-back. And those guys now get to put on another Super Bowl ring. You know, Sean Leahy, we talked with him last week. He said he didn't think those guys were big losses for the Patriots, but here they are winning the Super Bowl for the Eagles. And in my own mental ledger, that reduces the number of teams that have not won a Super Bowl. And so maybe that means the Cleveland Browns are going to get a chance sometime soon. I'm glad that the Eagles won because now they don't have to worry about winning anymore. And my hometown Cleveland Browns might be next up on the list.
Dan Friedell, thanks for chatting with us, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Sonny. Look forward to talking to you soon.
And that wraps up the February 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With a growing U.S. economy and a surging stock market at his back, President Donald Trump told leaders at the World Economic Forum that America is open for business and we are competitive once again. He noted that recently passed U.S. tax cuts and reforms are expected to raise the average American's household income by more than $4,000. The corporate tax rate was lowered from 35% to 21%, and a significant number of American companies are passing on bonuses to their workers in amounts as large as $3,000. The world's largest company, Apple, announced plans to bring $245 billion in overseas profits home to America. Eliminating unnecessary burdensome regulations is also a key factor, he said, in creating an environment that attracts capital, invites investment, and rewards production. President Trump encouraged his audience to come to America, where you can innovate, create, and build. But the president emphasized that his mission to put America first does not mean America alone.
When the United States grows, so does the world. American prosperity has created countless jobs all around the globe, and the drive for excellence, creativity, and innovation in the U.S. has led to important discoveries that help people everywhere live more prosperous and far healthier lives.
President Trump said that in order to have broadly shared prosperity, however, the international trading system must be reformed.
We cannot have free and open trade if some countries exploit the system at the expense of others. We support free trade, but it needs to be fair and it needs to be reciprocal, because in the end, unfair trade undermines us all.
President Trump pointed out that prosperity is impossible without security. That is why the United States is making historic investments in the American military and why it is asking friends and allies to invest in their own defenses and meet their financial obligations in order to make the world safer from rogue regimes, terrorism, and revisionist powers. We are all stronger when free, sovereign nations cooperate toward shared goals and shared dreams, President Trump declared. So together, let us resolve to use our power, our resources, and our voices, not just for ourselves, but for our people, to lift their burdens, to raise their hopes, and to empower their dreams, to protect their families, their communities, and their futures.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
I'm Lenore Mudu, host of Health Chat. February 6 is the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. This Tuesday, February 6, on Health Chat, we will discuss the controversial practice with our guest, Lucinda Clark, author of the suspenseful literary fiction, Amy, Cut for Life. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, political tensions simmer in Kenya as opposition leader Raila Odinga takes a symbolic presidential oath of office as the people's president, despite warnings from the nation's attorney general, who called the mock swearing-in of Odinga an act of treason. An in-depth look at Kenya's political future on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.